VOA News, I'm Tommy McNeil. Because of the threat to the U.S. by Hurricane Dorian, U.S. President Donald Trump is pulling out of attending events in Poland, commemorating the 80th anniversary of the start of the Second World War. VOA Steve Herman has more.
It could be an absolute monster.
President Trump, in an online video, says the government is gearing up to help the people of Florida.
We're ready. We have the best people in the world ready. And they're going to help you. We're shipping food. We're shipping water.
National Hurricane Center Director Ken Graham says Dorian will gain strength.
Forecasting the potential of a Category 4 storm, 130 miles an hour by the time we make landfall.
And while much of the state remains in the so-called cone of uncertainty, Graham says they are certain the big storm will hit late in the weekend.
It looks like late on Sunday into the evening.
I'm Tim McGuire.
Hong Kong democracy activist Joshua Wong was arrested on Friday, ahead of another weekend of planned protests on the Chinese-ruled city that is grappling with its biggest political crisis since its handover to Beijing more than two decades ago. Wong, the face of Hong Kong's push for full democracy during a protest in 2014 that paralyzed parts of the city for 79 days, was released from jail in June after serving a five-week term for contempt of court. The National Hurricane Center predicts that Hurricane Dorian will build into an extremely dangerous storm as it sucks up the warm Atlantic waters over the next 3 days. The storm could slam into southeastern Florida early Monday morning as a Category 4 hurricane. And Governor Ron DeSantis has declared a state of emergency for the entire state. Residents along Florida's Atlantic coast have been told to stand by for possible evacuations. This is VOA News. The Justice Department inspector says that former FBI Director James Comey broke bureau rules in his handling of memos documenting private talks with President Trump. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Comey wrote memos about conversations with the president, which he said unnerved him. The inspector general's office says Comey broke FBI rules by giving one of the memos to a friend with instructions to share its contents with a reporter. It also says Comey did not tell the FBI after being fired that he'd kept some of the memos in a home safe. The Justice Department had already decided it will not prosecute Comey over the matter. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The U.S. Special Representative to Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, told reporters at the State Department that America is ready for change in Venezuela and that embattled President Nicolas Maduro leaving power is a critical part of the country being able to move forward towards free elections and a transition to democracy. But Abrams stressed that this isn't about punishment, it's not about vengeance, and they've tried to make that clear. Abrams said that he has not yet seen any signs of a willingness by Maduro to negotiate a compromise where he voluntarily leaves power. Abrams said the negotiations hosted by Norway between Maduro's representatives and representatives of Juan Guaido, as the interim president of Venezuela, are on hiatus, with Guaido's team seeking to ascertain if Maduro is negotiating in good faith or simply trying to buy time. The CDC says that mumps has swept through 57 immigration detention facilities in 19 U.S. states since last September. AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
The virus has affected just under 900 migrant adults and 33 detention center staffers. The government report says as of last week, outbreaks were in 15 facilities in 7 states. In response, a spokesman for Immigration and Customs Enforcement said doctors and nurses at detention facilities screen all new detainees within 24 hours of their arrival to ensure that highly contagious diseases are not spread. Vaccines in the U.S. have drastically reduced the number of mumps outbreaks. Only a few hundred cases are reported in most years. I'm Shelley Adler.
The U.S. Treasury Department has sanctioned a Lebanese Jamal Trust Bank for brazenly enabling the financial activities of Hezbollah, Iran's proxy in Lebanon. Washington Thursday accused the bank of support and services to Hezbollah's executive council and the Martyrs Freed Foundation. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Abate in Washington. Today is Friday, August 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambia rejects a British envoy's allegation of rampant official corruption.
I want to make it clear that the Patriotic Front has never and will never underplay the seriousness of corruption and its negative effects on the country, both in the now and in future.
Sunday Chanda is the media director for Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party. In Sierra Leone, a church testimony lands a government official before the Anti-Corruption Commission. A new report says Nigeria's sex and labor trafficking survivors lack support, and South Sudan rebels who are not signatories to the current agreement meet to chart a new direction for the country.
We are launching a new vision of hope and transformation for the people of South Sudan. Yes, the people of South Sudan is longing for peace. However, we want to present to them a genuine peace.
Kwajet Lasu is the spokesperson for the South Sudan National Democratic Alliance rebels and trafficking children from Guinea-Bissau to beg for religious leaders. Those stories plus Samson Omale's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An official of Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party says criticism by the outgoing British High Commissioner of alleged rampant official corruption is in bad taste. Media director Sunday Chanda says President Edgar Lungu's administration continues to demonstrate the political will to fight corruption. Outgoing British High Commissioner Fergus Cochrane-Deatt was quoted by the local media as saying that corruption kills like any gun, depriving Zambians of life-saving government resources. Anti-graft groups and opposition parties have often accused the government of lacking the political will and, in some cases, condoning corruption. Media director Sunday Chanda tells viewers Peter Clotty that the outgoing British envoy failed to prove his allegations.
We wondered why the High Commissioner could choose to politic to paint Zambia black. Again, I want to make it clear that the Patriotic Front has never and will never underplay the seriousness of corruption and its negative effects on the country, both in the now and in future. And this can be evidenced by the various measures that the PF government has taken and continues to undertake in fighting this scourge. This is one country where there are no sacred cows, as has been demonstrated in the number of high-profile cases who have appeared before the courts of law. Others have been acquitted and others have been convicted. This is the first time that you have a president who says to the investigative wings that you can investigate my ministers and they can appear before the courts of law. But we are also mindful that under the Constitution of Zambia, the presumption of innocence is a guaranteed right for all.
But some people are saying that what are partners for if they cannot speak candidly to each other, and that the outgoing High Commissioner was being candid with Zambia instead of the Zambia taking this in good faith and re-strategizing in the fight against corruption. He is actually being attacked for being candid. They said the reaction of the government is unfortunate and regrettable.
The outgoing British High Commissioner is not the only High Commissioner serving in this country. And I want for anyone to show us an example of when an African High Commissioner serving in Europe or in the United States went to the media to publicly criticize the British government or the U.S. government, not because the two regimes are without faults. They've got their own faults. When ambassadors are accredited, there are channels of communication that exist between countries and among countries. And the law is very, very clear. So we do not expect that we are going to have high commissioners who want to incite the public to rise against the government. That is totally uncalled for.
Anti-graft activists have accused ministers of using public money to fund lavish lifestyles, with some ministers owning approximately 40 homes while most Zambians live in poverty. So it is in this regard that the outgoing High Commissioner is referencing as a measure, the critics say, to urge the government to strengthen its fight against corruption.
It's not everyone who's in politics who goes into politics to make money. And this notion is wrong. You cannot just allege what you cannot prove. The standard practice worldwide is that if you allege corruption, provide the evidence. And if you see someone driving on the road and you think that is corruption, provide evidence. And for purposes of clarity, let me make it clear here that there's no minister who's linked to 44 houses. There's talk of 48 houses. And as a party, we say that we are interested in finding out who the real owners are. And we are not going to shy away from this particular matter. We are serious about fighting corruption. The measures that this government has put in place with regard to fighting corruption are very, very clear and on point.
Sunday Chanda is the media director for Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. In Sierra Leone, a church testimony has landed a government official before the country's anti-corruption commission. Fatmata Etna Kabo, a top aide to President Julius Maada Bio, caught the attention of the anti-corruption commission after a video of her sharing a testimony with the congregation of the Senegal Church of All Nations in Nigeria surfaced online. In the two-minute video, Kabo talked about how her new government appointment helped her complete a house that she has been building for 10 years. Meanwhile, Ms. Kabo has reportedly been ordered to take a leave. Margaret Murray, the spokesperson for the Sierra Leone Anti-Corruption Commission, she says the agency wants to know the sources of Ms. Kabo's newfound wealth.
If people could recall, a few weeks ago, there was a video trending on social media where she actually claimed to have finished building her unfinished buildings during the time she was the chief of protocol. So because of the trending video on social media, we thought it was fit for us to investigate so that we can actually better ascertain her source of income and look into her assets as well.
She mentioned that she has been constructing this house for many years and she completed it soon after she was appointed. Is it possible that maybe she got the money from her new job?
So that is exactly what we're looking into. We're looking into everything pertaining to the state chief of protocol to know exactly where she got the money from to finish building.
You said that she has been cooperating. What do you mean?
She's been cooperating with investigations. She's not a hostile person. She is answering all our questions, giving us documentations that we've asked her to produce. And she's been very helpful with our investigations.
So in the meantime, according to the story here, that she has been, what, ordered to go on leave? Is that correct?
That's a story that's going around that she's been ordered to go on leave, but the anti-corruption is not looking to that. All we're doing is investigating her, and if our investigations prove that her source of income is from an unexplained wealth and she cannot give us good information to stand by the fact that she finished her building from the salary she's receiving as scope, then we will take further steps whether to go through our court-based approach. And if we do indict her, then she would need to completely step aside as the scope.
So, Margaret, until, what do you say to people who say, who might say that your commission is being too aggressive?
We're not being too aggressive. The people of Sierra Leone have entrusted in us to actually carry out the job we're doing, and we're giving back to the people exactly what they've asked of us. So we're just asking people to be patient with us and also to give us the free hand to do our job as best possible. So we're not being harsh whatsoever. We're just letting people know, because some people have come forward to say the new anti-corruption is on a witch hunt, but then we're now proving to the people of Sierra Leone that the new commissioner or the new commission is not on a witch hunt. We're actually going after everybody and anybody who engages in corruption or anybody who believes that has something to do with corruption. If you have unexplained wealth, you should be able to explain to us exactly how you got your income, what source of income you're getting, and all of that. We're just doing our job as best as possible.
Maybe people should be careful what they say in church. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Margaret Murray, spokesperson for Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. She was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 30th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour.
Nigerian women who managed to escape sex and labor trafficking are not getting enough support from their government, Human Rights Watch says in a new report. The 90-page report says women and girls are held in slavery-like conditions inside Nigeria, revealing accounts of unlawful detention in shelters. Officials from Nigeria's anti-human trafficking agency have condemned the report. Chika Oluwa reports from Enugu.
6 years ago, a young Nigerian woman named Adora was lured to Libya to work as a domestic servant when she was 18 years old. Adora says she survived the grueling journey out of Nigeria and through the Sahara Desert. When she arrived in Libya, she was forced into prostitution. Then she was abducted by Islamic State terrorists and held captive for 3 years. They took us to an underground prison, Adora said. With the help of Libyan soldiers and the International Organization for Migration, she escaped and returned to Nigeria. But in Nigeria, she faced another set of problems. Human Rights Watch says Adora was detained by NAPTIP, Nigeria's National Agency for the Prohibition of Trafficking in Persons. The federal government agency is tasked with helping trafficked victims, but Adora alleges she was not allowed to leave one of its shelters at will, and she struggled to fend off thoughts of killing herself. Like Adora, thousands of Nigerian women and girls have been trafficked within Nigeria and to other countries in the past 3 decades. Nigeria is routinely listed as one of the countries with large numbers of trafficking victims overseas, particularly in Europe, with victims identified in more than 34 countries in 2018, according to the U.S. State Department Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons. Adora is one of the 76 trafficking survivors in Nigeria whom Human Rights Watch interviewed in a report released this week. The document is called You Pray for Death, Trafficking of Women and Girls in Nigeria. Girls as young as 8 years of age are included. The report accuses Nigerian authorities of not doing enough to take care of repatriated women and girls and claims they are kept in slavery-like conditions after they've managed to escape exploitation as sex workers or slaves. Human Rights Watch says the survivors struggle with issues like anxiety and depression, insomnia and flashbacks. A 24-year-old woman by the name of Gladness, who was featured in the report, said she was kept in a NAPTIP shelter for about 3 weeks. Gladness was quoted as saying she has not been told when she will be going home. Abdul Ganiyu Abubakar, the director of the Save the Child initiative in Nigeria, says NAPTIP should make sure that the shelters are comfortable and that people are not being held against their will. The director general of NAPTIP, Julie Oka Donley, said that no one is being forcefully held. Speaking to journalists this week, she denied the accusations in the report. Chika Odua for VOA News in Enugu, Nigeria.
South Sudan rebel leaders who are not signatories to the September 2018 revitalized peace agreement have been meeting in The Hague, the Netherlands, to unite their ranks. Kwaje Lasu, spokesperson for Thomas Tirino's South Sudan National Democratic Alliance rebels, says the leaders of the National Salvation Front, South Sudan United Front, and the former detainees are discussing how to form one group to fight the government of South Sudan. Lasu says the current revitalized peace agreement fails to address what he calls the fundamental causes of the South Sudan crisis.
One of the main issues the peace agreement failed to address satisfactorily, it is the issue of federal system of governance. Number two, based on the federal system of governance, we demanded that the power has to be devalued to the lower levels of the governance. That's failed to address specifically. Three, the security sector of South Sudan, we demanded to be reformed to reflect the diversity of the people of South Sudan. That failed to be addressed.
Mr. Lasu, as you know, the people of South Sudan, peace has been a long time coming to them. What do you hope to achieve from your meeting in the Netherlands?
The most important aspect of our meeting, first and foremost, as an opposition group, we are launching a new vision of hope and transformation for the people of South Sudan. Number two, we are meeting to unite our front. Number three, yes, the people of South Sudan is longing for peace. However, we want to present to them a genuine peace, a peace that will be sustained, can be durable. Today, with this current peace agreement that has been signed, we have millions of South Sudanese in the refugee camps outside the country. Above all, we have refugees within South Sudan living in camps. How can we call this a genuine peace? This peace has potential of breaking to another chaos in the nearest future.
As I mentioned, Mr. Lasu, there have been so many peace processes in South Sudan. What makes you think that your group has the key to genuine peace, as you described it?
Well, we have the backing of our people. We represent the voices and the views of our people who really, really wanted to see a genuine peace and reform and transformation in our country.
There is a government in South Sudan which also can claim that it has the support of the people of South Sudan.
They have all the reason and the right to claim so. But I can speak with certainty, this peace agreement for the elites in Juba. It is not for the people of South Sudan. Classic example, during the peace negotiation, before we addressed the core issues of the crisis, we've been presented with portfolios, positions. Many of us categorically refuse. We are not there to negotiate position. Where on earth, in Africa, a population of 10 million or so, we have 450 to 500 members in parliament. Where are the resources to build the basic need of our people? Juba today proposed five vice presidents. Where on earth do we need five vice presidents? That is an accommodative peace agreement. We need a genuine peace whereby the resources can be devalued to the people, and the people will have the basic service that they need.
You want this genuine peace. Will it be to the exclusion of the current government? Will you exclude them or will you include them?
We will let the people of South Sudan decide that, because we cannot continue doing the same thing expecting different results.
I'm guessing that you will exclude them.
I did not say that, and I will not rule that out as well.
I think there's a deadline coming maybe November for the formation of a transitional government. Do you have any hope that this will happen?
Unfortunately, our position is very clear. We don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. If anything, it's going to be a short-lived government. Even with the signatory in Juba, now they're having second thoughts. Many members of the opposition who went to Juba are having second thoughts. So therefore, I'm not holding my horses for government in November.
Kwaje Lasu is the spokesperson for the South Sudan Rebel National Democratic Alliance. He was speaking with us from The Hague in the Netherlands. A recent investigation by the Institute for Security Studies shows that the troubling practice of trafficking children from Guinea-Bissau into neighboring Senegal to beg for religious leaders is still widespread, despite local and international efforts to stop it. Muhammadu Khan, a researcher at the Institute for Security Studies, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the findings of their investigation.
Most of the parents who entrust their children to Marabu don't know the reality in Senegal. This was confirmed by the children themselves. And I myself, I call many parents who have their children right now in the country. They told me they don't know that their children are begging. So it means they get the wrong information. Because they are not educated, they don't know anything. Whoever come back, or any Marabu comes back to the village, who is a big, you know, tradition, is a new status, they are... And for them, their main intention is to get their children studied. But what's behind this, they don't know, because they get really wrong information from the Marabu. Another thing is, there is no school in Guinea-Bissau. Yeah. Let's say, in the region of Gabu and Bafata, there are almost 250 villages, and there are only 19 schools there.
Are there any efforts to share this information, to spread information to these villages about in warning signs about things that they need to know before they hand their child over to a Marabu?
It is sensitive in Senegal and in Guinea-Bissau as well, but parents are being now more and more aware because there is sensitization that is being done by many organizations and many actors as well. So for me, this dynamic should really continue. Because I know the Brigade of Miners, okay, AMIC and SOS Crianza are doing a great job in sensitizing the parents, but they don't have means, they don't have materials, they don't have anything.
There are things being said that weren't being said 2 years ago about there are divisions being sown for political reasons between the Muslim community and the rest of Guinea-Bissau.
Well, it's the Muslim community, but it doesn't even deal entirely with the Muslim community, only with Fulani.
but that is definitely part of the political dialogue,
because
not just Muslims, but Fulani.
Parents of victims know the problem, and now they are ready to support this initiative.
Yeah.
I've been to the field. I've been there. I discussed with them. They know the problem. This is a problem. I've been to Beijing. Beijing is where Islam really started in Guinea-Bissau. It's imams. Okay, in Beijing or in Bafata, in Kabul, they told me, hey, this is wrong. This is not a good practice. There is a new dynamic being observed. Those who were before very conservative, reluctant to hear the speech of the international community, they are now more and more open. And this gives us some hope that things can change.
Muhammad Dukan is a researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. He was speaking to Ray Kishtrayak from Dakar. Time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Rabat, Morocco, where the 12th edition of the All-African Games is expected to come to a close on Saturday. In football, the Nigerian under-20 women's team emerged as the champions of the 2019 All-African Games women event after they beat Cameroon 3-2 on penalties. Meanwhile, their male counterparts, 1973 champions Nigeria, will look to win their first gold in men's football tournament of the All-African Games when they take on Burkina Faso in the final of the event in Rabat later today. Egyptian weightlifter Salma Farag won 3 medals on Thursday in weightlifting. The Egyptian athlete won silver medal in 81-kilogram snatch competition after lifting 96 kilograms and got a bronze in the 81 kilograms clean and jerk category after lifting 120 kilograms. She also got a silver medal in the 216 kilograms lift. In badminton, South Africa women's badminton team defeated Nigeria 2-0 to win gold also on Thursday. While in the women's tennis singles final, Chanel Simmons of South Africa lost to Ma'el Sharif of Egypt 6-3, 6-3 for Sharif to pick up the gold medal. After 14 days of competition, Egypt tops the medal table with 79 gold, 87 silver and 63 bronze medal. Nigeria is in second spot with 40 gold, 28 silver, 35 bronze medals, while South Africa occupies the third position on the table with 32 gold, 24 silver and 21 bronze medals. In basketball news, Hermen Niang of Mali was on Thursday in Beijing elected the Federation of International Basketball Association president at the Basketball Federation's Congress. The former African basketball president was the only candidate for the position. FIBA operates a rotation system for the presidency, meaning an African president must serve from 2019 to 2023. Niang was head of FIBA Africa from 2014 to 2019 and a member of the International Federation's board during the same period. Kenya bagged 2 gold and 2 bronze medals during the first day of the 2019 World Martial Arts Mastership Championship at the Korean National University of Transport on Thursday. Kenya collected its first gold medal in the men's sparring 90 kilograms, where Gordon Ochieng managed to register a narrow 3-2 victory over Korea's Ki Hong Lee. Namibia has been chosen to host the African Youth Chess Championships in December. According to the Namibia Chess Federation Vice President Ephraim Jane, the tournament is expected to attract over 500 players from all over the continent. The tournament will take place in Windhoek from December 14th to the 22nd. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again Monday morning. That is it for this Friday, August 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.